further ado, bring out the two-time Oscar-winning director of Gemini Man, Ang Lee. Seriously, the greatest showman, the greatest producer of movies. And he's here, he produced Gemini Man. Please welcome Jerry Bruckheimer. You have a fan backstage, I'm guessing. The guy who's whooping and hollering. Let's bring him out. I'm not sure if he's the younger version or the older version, but he looks amazing anyway. Please welcome Will Smith. Now we know. The thing is up. Ladies and gentlemen, please bring out Will's co-star, Clyde Owen. Please welcome visual effects supervisor Bill Westenhofer. Last but certainly not least, please welcome Weta visual effects supervisor Guy Williams.
Energy.
It's all about the film, and really, Jerry. I know that this the screenplay, the story, has been going on for a very, very long time. When did you come on? What made you fall in love with the story? And what was sort of the story at that time? And how did it evolve to what we now have now seen?
Well, it's been at least 10 years that we've been working on this, and. The issue was that technology hadn't caught up with the creativity of the writer. So we had to wait for these gentlemen over here and Ang Lee to figure out how to get this movie made. We did some unsuccessful versions of this in testing, and it looked pretty awful. So we kind of put it on the shelf until Ang said, I have a whole new way of doing this. And he said, I'm going to create something really special. And he certainly did.
Okay, and what were the first conversations that you had? Like, what made you, like, sort of see, hey, you know, Ang Lee is the guy to direct this movie? And Ang, what made you say, I am the guy to direct this movie?
Of course I'm the guy.
That's Ang's inner gangster rapper. That's what I've learned in spending time with. He has an inner gangster rapper that every once in a while just comes out.
Well, it's just too attractive, so that makes me like, yes. Each time I make a movie, I have that feeling, I am the guy. There's nobody else, it's my movie, you know. You make that connection, so the visceral connection. I do feel this one. Actually, the first person to talk to me was David Ellison in his office at Skydance. As soon as I hear a clone, a younger version, I just feel I'm old enough to deal with this stuff. Like looking back, what am I? When you see a clone, and we're just a piece of jeans, why do we exist? All this philosophical stuff hit me first. Then what kind of fun we're gonna have. And I know we're getting into a digital world and how we create it. And I've experienced the Hulk 20 years ago, and not too long ago, I experienced the tiger in Life of Pi. In my head, this is within reach. But I know as with human face, you're playing with fire. It's pretty, you're in a God's realm. Like, it's pretty scary, but at the same time, it's pretty exciting. So I signed on. The first time we talked is, I said, I want to do it, but I want to have a new approach, and I want to try a different media. So I invited Jerry and whole Skydance people into my New York editing room to see a reel of Bill Lindstone halftime walk. I said, this is the media I want to do. I want to approach in a digital way with Junior. And then they fell for it. So that's how we started. I was quite surprised. After Bill Lindstone, somebody like, here we go. I've got to give them a lot of credit and support they have for this project. You know, some shots take a year. And while we're shooting, we have to turn over before they see anything. They're like, okay, we trust this guy.
You know, Will, I want to ask, you know, ultimately so much has been written and talked about already with like the technology and how it breaks ground and breaks boundaries, which it absolutely does, and we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, the script is the thing. So what was it like for you when you read this the first time that made you just go, I'm in?
You know, I loved the philosophical idea that we all plant the seeds of our own destruction. Like, we are our own worst enemies. Like, you know, that we make choices and we make decisions in our lives that set things in motion that we can't blame other people for. And that the battle with trying to overcome our karma, you know? And I just thought it was a really clever and creative way to say that we are the architects of our ultimate rise or fall. And to be able to do that in this way, and it's a big part of why I love science fiction, because you can put those things under really wild visual landscapes.
Well, Clive, you know, when you look at the way the movie was being made while it was being shot, you know, like when I think of some of the movies you've done in the last, you know, 20 years, when I look at movies like Children of Men, which is like, you know, just such a great movie. And, you know, but also something, you know, breaking the ice. I love it. Bring it. Do it. It's great. But also like Shoot 'Em Up, which is very you know, visceral, action-heavy film. You know, what did you see as like the challenges with making this movie that were different from the other films that you've made?
I think it's like a brilliant coming together of something that's, you know, hugely, it's full of action. It's a great premise. It feels like a huge movie, but it's also, you know, it's about characters and it's about drama and it's very intimate and personal. And I think that Mr. Ang Lee is the ultimate director for a movie like this, because he's on top of all the technology, he's on top of what huge drama is, but he's also incredibly artistic and specific and detailed. So, you know, I think, you know, I was just hugely excited the minute I got sent the script. Yeah.
You know, when the story is like you were talking about, like just how, you know, Jerry, when you jumped in and how the technology wasn't quite there and all the testing you had been doing, I want to ask, like, what was the breakthrough moment? What was the aha we got moment when you said, we can do this? That's for you.
You're still waiting for that.
Yeah. you know, when Ang first came to me, we talked about how we were going to do this. We did look at what had been done in the past and where the technology was. There have been some pretty close attempts at Rogue One and Blade Runner the year before. And we thought that things had matured, and it was kind of very similar to what he'd done. I worked with him on Life of Pi, and he came to me and said, can we do for a human what we did for the tiger? So we looked and said, technology's close enough that if we put the same determination into it, we thought we felt confident that we could do that. And, you know, honestly, if something doesn't scare me a little bit, it's not really worth doing. So there was some fear involved, but we did feel confident that the technology was close enough that with a raw determination, with the incredible skill and talent of the people at Weta, that we could do this.
I was just going to add that we've been toying around with digital humans a lot with stunt work, but to really break this barrier, what we needed was a project that supported it. You know, the commitment not just to have a couple of shots where you want to have a guy doing something falling off a building, but truly have a digital human standing in front of camera, acting and resonating with the audience and delivering the lines and serving the story. And this film was the perfect opportunity to actually be able to bring it all together.
And I really want to, you know, I've been doing a lot of interviews, and I think people don't completely understand the depth of what you guys have attempted and accomplished here, right? So this Junior is not de-aging, right? So it's not my face, and then they smoothed out my face to make it look younger. It's a 100% digital human, in the same way that the tiger in The Life of Pi, for they used a real tiger to understand the movement, but in the movie, when you're seeing the tiger, you're seeing 100% digital recreation of a tiger. This is not me, de-aged. It's a 100% digital interpretation of me. It's a digital character. It's the first digital human, right? So it's actually a spectacular thing to be able to make people feel emotion in that way, capturing the youthful eyes. That's the thing for me that was so amazing. It was the hardest part that me and Aang were talking about. It's like, you can't fake innocence, right? So it's like, you know, I was doing an interview the other day, and I was trying to explain it. It's like, as a young actor, it's easier to play older, but older, it's difficult to impossible to play younger. Once you know some stuff, it's in your eyes, right? It's in your cells once you know some stuff. So to try to have eyes that unknow, like sex, like once you've had sex, you know, you walk different. It's in your back, you know? You know, so their job in the creating of a digital human was to be able to sell that innocence and that youth, and to be able to sell a digital human in that way. And I think you guys have done spectacular work.
I want to say that Will's being very humble in this one aspect, because there, despite all that, there is no magic button that we could push to say make him look young. He had to ingest that and be himself at 23. Yeah, we could put the look and make sure he looked like his 23-year-old self, but the performance and the innocence had to come from him. So that was.
I want to ask. Okay, so this technology to do that. Okay, but the trick here is that it has to be invisible.
Right.
Right. You can't look at it and go, "That's a great special effect."
Right.
You have to go, "That's Will Smith."
Right.
Okay. So how did you make sure that you always made that element invisible?
I have this whole plan of, first we see him with sunglasses in bright sunlight, but he seems to see a ghost. It was an action sequence. Very exciting, so hopefully you accept that existence. Then I have a shot of an intimate moment, you get into the world being a real person. And then we move on, but then the trailer seems to give everything away in one minute. That got me really, really nervous. I think everything we talk about, actually that was the easier part. The people call it technology. It's really an artistic endeavor. We work with everybody's imagination, collective self-consciousness. So that's a real enemy, a challenge. The science these guys did was mind-boggling. When they showed me what age does that, what they can talk better that way. It is mind-boggling to study into the science of aging and our structure and how our emotion connects with every tissue in our body. It's just mind-boggling. But that's like, I would say 10% of the work. When everything is absolutely right, believable, it's not really believable, because it's too correct, just to mess it up. So we think that's the movie he used to play, but it's a different person in this media, in that situation. That was a lot of scratching ahead and very expensive process to try it again and again with a huge data keep running. I think that's just play along people's ability, as you said. There's no law to it. You change an angle, you change some lighting, change a scene. Like The Life of Pi, that tiger, And then I remember it was one day in the night one to post, like, we got it. From now on, we know that tiger. There's never such a moment here. It come and go, come and go. You know, it's just like, it's whimsical.
Jerry, I want to ask, so here's a film. It's not a sequel. It's not a prequel. It's not a Star Wars movie. It's not a superhero movie. It's not a reboot. It's not a sequel of a reboot. You get where I'm going.
It means it should have been on Netflix.
Yeah, they're a very, very, very big TV. But Jerry, like, how rewarding was it to really nurture this film along these last, you know, more than 12 years or so?
Well, it's always great when you find a piece of material in love with and you can bring it to an audience and hopefully they'll enjoy it the way you enjoyed it when you read it. And you have to understand that when they talk about digital Will, it's his performance. So it's 100% Will's performance on a digital full body. It's not just they replace the head, it's everything. So he wore a head thing so he played two characters in this movie. He did first the Henry part of it, and then he turned around and did the junior part of it. So it was grueling for him to play two parts every single day two characters were on screen together. So you have to understand the accomplishment that not only Weta did and Aang did, but his performance is outstanding for two parts. It's so difficult, draining.
But Will, you know what, I want to ask you about this. You know, you are playing yourself. How do you, see, you know, when you're watching, you're seeing how Junior, there's definitely a drive and ambition and energy. You know, there's that word again, energy. But there's also a naivete about him, you know, because he's just not, you know, world weary like Henry is. So how did you make sure that you separated your performance as Henry from your performance as Junior?
Well, what was really great that Aang did is before we even met, he had gone through all of my filmography and he grabbed things that, you know, he grabbed the Fresh Prince, he grabbed 6 Degrees of Separation, it was Bad Boys, Independence Day, Men in Black. And he, you know, he grabbed the scenes and, you know, he was sort of walking me through moments and, you know, he would look and he'd say, I love very much what you have done in this moment here at 6 Degrees of Separation. In Bad Boys, this one was good, but don't ever do this at my So we sort of created a language of my the old characters and the moments of what he was trying to capture. It's funny, there's a thing before you learn how to act, there's a powerful thing that you have from not knowing. And it's really difficult to recapture that not knowing. And we found these moments, we found these really honest moments in some of the my early work. But I would say of all the things, that was the most difficult part. It almost felt like learning how to do some bad acting, like go back to bad acting, right? Because there's an honesty before you actually learn where the light is and you learn how to stand and you learn what makes people clap for movie stars in the, you know, in the theater. And it's like letting go of all of that stuff was really difficult.
You know, Clive, the scene, you know, where we have Henry and we have Junior in the same scene. This, you know, it's a very human scene. Everyone is interacting with each other. Take us through what it was like to make a scene like that when you have Will, but you also have Junior in the scene, but maybe Will wasn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We got it. Just make up something good, Clive.
Most of my stuff was with young Will, so you know we did. And it's true, like, you can talk about all the technology and how amazing it is, but unless you've got the acting and the drama and the script and people are feeling things, I don't know how much that counts for, really. So a lot of the time I was acting with Will with this huge head rig on, which was, you know, for all the stuff they're going to do later. But I have to say, the truth of the matter is, because he's so focused and so, you know, such a good actor, all of that disappears very quickly. And I don't even see it. I have to avoid it because
there was a thing with cameras on. So every time we had a scene together, I had this long thing and it had cameras on. So we'd be talking and we'd be talking. You know, how could you do this to me?
But honestly, all of that soon disappears and you end up, it's like you're acting a scene like you act any scene. Like you're focusing on what's important and you act as you would in any other movie. There's just this huge operation going on around it.
You know, one of the high points of the film, action-wise, is the bike chase. And there's this part of the film where you're following Henry, you know, like, it's all sort of one take. So again, this goes back to like the biggest challenge of the film, to look invisible, that you're not drawing attention to like the junior aspect of it, but it's still a great, great scene. So what were the challenges to really bring that scene to full fruition, because it is such a visceral, edge of your seat moment?
I think what was really cool is that especially with this format, it shows so much detail, and because of that, we went to great lengths to film as much as we possibly could. There was this camera rig is this 80-pound combination to film native stereo, and it's put on the back of this e-bike. So the guy who's driving the camera is as skilled, if not more, than the stunt guys that are driving behind it, tearing through traffic, popping up on walls. But we filmed that for real. We had stunt riders, and then we went back and we'd replace Junior's torso to put Junior on there. But we tried to do, you know, only use CGI where we had to. But there were some fun things as well, because you are in the moment. Aang experimented with what is it like if you are on that bike and you're experiencing it. Those are things you haven't seen before. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things, in the process of creating a young Will, we, not being able to go back in time 30 years in the past and do everything we need to do to acquire a young Will, we start with current day Will. So we build that digital human up to a certain spec, and then we move from there to get to the young one. What that allowed us to do in the bike scene that was kind of fun was we were able to say, don't worry about how close you get to the stunt performer, right? You know, have him drive right up into the camera, and we'll replace what we need to replace, so it becomes Will Smith. So it just makes for such an interesting stunt scene to be able to see your actor playing both roles and not just constantly trying to look away from camera so you can't tell that it's not the same guy.
And it wouldn't cut either. That was another really fun thing, is that, you know, a lot of action sequences are a lot of cuts to high trickery. We didn't have that luxury. We extended takes, and we had to, you know, for the same thing, to allow you're following Henry on the bike through this alleyway, and then you come all the way to the end, and he comes right to camera. Well, you know, there was a stunt rider for the bulk of that, but then we found a way to get Will's performance in at the very end as well, and just make it one seamless thing.
And that's the thing that I love also, and because everyone is looking at young the junior character, everyone is watching. People don't actually realize there are full digital old Henry shots in the film also. So there are moments when, you know, full frame, you know, close up shots are old. It's hard for me, I'm like, young Will, old Will. It's like, young me, old me. It's like, so, that there are full digital shots of old Will, old Henry in the film also. And that's when you can really tell that it works, when people aren't thinking about it. It is a full body.
Yeah, Will, Aang and Jerry, I want to ask about shooting 120 frames per second. Why go that way? And, you know, for a lot of people who aren't like super, super tech savvy with sort of thing, like what exactly does that mean? What was the goal with the 120 frames per second?
I think the goal is to bring a new experience to an audience. We have, you know, we haven't made huge technological advances in cinema for quite a while. I mean, we went from black and white to color. We're digital, mostly digital now. So the image is clear, but this is a huge, huge jump as far as what an audience is going to experience. It's immersive. It puts you right in there with the actors, and it takes a little while for you to get used to it, because you're not used to seeing something with such clarity ever. So Aang really is pioneering this technology because we have to advance cinema. I mean, people are so comfortable in their homes because they have these big televisions and everything is interesting that we're making for television. There's a lot of good material on television now. So we have to have technology that you can't actually see in your home to get people back to the theaters.
And cameras that you used. Yeah.
I was gonna say, in order to, it's so clear, so it responds the way reality responds to your eye, and that was the attempt to make it a much more realistic experience, so much so, it's so crystal clear that the actors couldn't wear makeup, because when the camera comes in, you could see makeup on our faces. So I had to drink a lot of water, you know. couldn't afford a breakout.
The cameras that you used.
To me, people talk about clarity. To me, it's really the sharpness. I think when you're doing 3D, to allow people to be more immersive, to mimic the experience, how we experience in real life, so you feel it's real, you're in it. To invite them to that world, it's not just clear, it's sharp. The way you process the image through two eyes with an angle is different than when we used to watch a movie, which is more dreamy. Well, it's a lot, like, you know, it's the best thing happened to me, to anybody in our lives. But this is something new. When you want to experience the movie, then just watching it, when you're basking in that situation, I think your mind needs to be sharper. It just needs to be sharper in perception. Details, you have to be more accurate to even begin with. I think eventually we'll go to the abstract feeling, like we do abstract feeling about a man struggling with himself, but when you visualize it, when you play out, it takes a lot of details and sharpness, even just the process in our head to believe that's real, like real life. So the frame rate needs to be raised. At least the basic is the stroke rate. Because in life, there's blur, there's no stroke. It's not lifelike. Your eyes want to believe that's real, then you have to get rid of those obstacles to allow them to get into that world. They really challenge that, how do you make that movie? We don't know how to, we just try. I hope it works. It's a new media. It's technology related, but it's really a media. And we're trying to find a way to find a relationship with that media.
I mean, clearly, it's a movie that it's a absolutely, like, the ultimate big screen cinematic immersive experience. Like, throughout the whole course of the film, you're in it, and I think that's a testament to the film. But Will, so throughout the course of the making of the movie, so you finally get to a point where the movie's far enough along where you're able to see whether it's a scene, a work print, or maybe the finished cut. You sit down, you watch the movie, and you see Junior. What goes through your mind?
Yeah, no, it was really crazy the first time I saw it. It was chilling almost. It was a little scary because the first one I saw was one of my favorite shots in the whole movie was when Henry flips Junior over in the catacombs and then puts the light up onto Junior's face. And so that was one of the first, like, completed shots that I saw. And you know, it was a little bit surreal, a little bit weird. And then I started getting excited about all of the possibilities. The young Will Smith, young Marlon Brando movie that could get made, you know, and it could get made while I'm at home, which would be great, you know. But it's a full 23-year-old digital version of myself, and my mind just started to go wild about what you'd be able to do. Even the action sequences, how the action sequences were done, is normally you do an action sequence and, you know, you can't actually punch somebody in the face. So, you know, you take the shot, you go by, and the actor goes, ah, you know, and you go, oh no, you missed, you know, so you move the camera and you keep going. Now, what we do is, what they were able to do with this technology, you do the scene, you do the swing, and then they take the fist and actually put it on the face of the digital character and bend the face and throw the sweat and all of that. So when you're seeing those shots now, whereas we're used to seeing misses with sound and blur, now you're seeing full shots in the same way you'd see in MMA, right? So it was a really a great new way to do the action, and you do all the, you know, all these different variations, and then the stuntmen can do full takes, and we can do full takes, and then they'll be able to make the most visceral version of it when they get all of those assets into post. So in terms of action, I'm really excited about the use of this technology in the future.
Well, let's take questions from the audience. Fred, you're first. You. Oh yeah, here comes the mic.
I will. Well, now I want to know if the episode of Fresh Prince where Will's father comes to visit was one of Ang Lee's references for you.
Yeah, you know, no, he didn't pull that one. With the Fresh Prince, I think Ang, he found it more interesting to show me what not to do.
Well, my question was, you crafted your movie career very carefully with science fiction movies that were inspired by the movies that were the biggest hits at the box office at the time. Well, in this climate today, as Scott was describing with franchises and reboots and everything, is a movie like Gemini Man the underdog?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, definitely in this new world, it's a whole lot safer from a financial standpoint to make a part three of something than it is to do something brand new from the ground up. But that's what we were all excited about with this, and what Ang kept saying, and why to push the envelope is to give people a new reason to go to movie theaters to see something that you can't see at home. In terms of, I think the first part of the question was for me, it was Star Wars was the movie when I was growing up that absolutely, I was stunned sitting after Star Wars ended. I couldn't believe that they could make me feel like that with a story and with these characters. And I think career-wise, the things I've been chasing are Star Wars and Thriller are the two pieces of entertainment that I've always been hoping to make something that matches for others how I felt when I experienced those.
Got a question right over here. Yes.
Yes, Rich McCain. Good to see you again, Will.
Hello, sir.
Anyway, this is for Mr. Lee and Mr. Brockheimer. For years, there's been controversy about digital actors replacing real actors. I know you guys are familiar with that. So this film basically proves that it can be done. So how do you think the reaction is going to be with people like the Union and folks like that that might feel a little threatened by this character?
Be careful with this question, man.
To me, I have the same goal as this guy sitting over there. We want to be recognized, but at the end of the day, the biggest praise we can have is nobody think about asking that. They just watch the movie. And watch the story of Junior without thinking about it. But that's very difficult to do. To the first part of the question, the scared, I think for a long time we don't really have to. The digital one is a lot more expensive than this guy. So I'm gonna have to know. It's so hard, so risky, and so expensive. Five times? Yeah, this guy's easy.
He's easy. You're right.
Will for a long time.
Right, yeah.
The one thing I'd add there, though, is that even though there's a 23-year-old Will Smith on the frame, the performance was not created in the computer, right? That's the point of distinction that a lot of people just don't remember, is that every single take, even all those stunt falls that we did where we replaced the stunt Will with the stunt performer, sorry, vice versa, we had Will act it out in the mocap stage. So the character, the performance comes from the actor. We the digital creature, the digital character, the digital human does not replace the actor in that regard.
We did this. That using a stuntman to play him. We always pretend something happened. We use substitutes to make believe, and this is a new way to do it.
We did this for a reason, because we had old Will Smith in the same frame with young Will Smith, so there's really no alternative. It's still forever going to be better to use a real actor when you can. This just allows you to tell stories and do different things that wouldn't be possible otherwise.
Okay, there's a question right up here in the front, if you have the microphone.
Come back to you. Snatched it out of his hand. Yeah. Like, oh, damn. It was your shoes, but, hey, thank you. Thank you.
Okay,
Learn how to share. Learn how to share.
Can you just talk a little bit about, we find out the back history of both the young and the older Will. Can you talk about how you saw both of the way they were raised, making them the men they became?
So that was one of the major discussions that we were having in terms of nature versus nurture. And, you know, how if you're genetically identical, how much does your life experience affect the things that you say and do and feel? So we were trying to draw as, you know, big a difference as possible as we could between the characters. And Henry, you know, grew up in you know, brutal household, and he had a tougher upbringing, where Junior had the perfect upbringing with Clive's character, and in Clive's character's pursuit of the perfect human, he was trying to lay out the perfect experience for a young Junior. So it was all of the right schools, and he was only allowed to read the right books, and he was only allowed to experience the best of what the nurturing aspects of a home should be. So in you know, drawing those distinctions, it was still interesting that it still came down to you know, two men who had taken these gifts that they had and still turned them into things that were going to, I don't know what the line was, but that were still going to create nightmares, and that were going to, you know, create a horrible end to this experience. So I don't know if that answers the question. Pretty close.
Final, yes. Yep.
Hey. Hi, Dennis from VOTV Hong Kong. First of all, congratulations, great movie. I have a question for Anne and Will. So you guys mentioned that both of you like watched the work of Will years ago together. So how was the experience like? Was it like fun or somehow like embarrassing maybe? And also for Will, what is your favorite work of Anne like before? Have you ever imagined yourself being like fighting like a crouching tiger, or the tiger in Love of Pi maybe?
We watched all of the original work, and of my original work, and was that fun? Dude, no. You know, there's no fun at all with Ang Lee up on the edge of his chair watching everything you've ever done, every moment, and breaking it down and describing. Yeah, so that I wouldn't say that was fun. but it was in terms of being in a film school environment, it was fantastic. I grew as an actor and as a human for the time that I was able to spend with such an incredible artist as Ang Lee.
How was that film school environment for you, Clive, working with Will, but especially with Ang?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a really, really great experience. I mean, as I said before, you know, we've talked a lot about the technology and the, you know, the huge sort of advancements that are being made in film, but ultimately this man is an artist, and we'll talk about specific lines and details of character, because, you know, as I said before, all of it counts for nothing if you're not invested in the drama of something. And so it feels like, you know, he's the perfect man to do a film like this, where, you know, and also we haven't really talked about the whole subject of of cloning. I read an article like 4 weeks ago in the New York Times about somebody cloning a cat that is actually done, and that this whole thing about cloning pets is becoming an ethical issue. And you know, this film also brings up, we're not that far away from what the film is discussing, really, and it's coming fast, and there are going to be huge ethical decisions and discussions that people are going to have.
So we need more people.
The learning is bilateral, I have to say. It flows both ways, and in every which way. At some point, you just feel this camaraderie. It's like you're in a trench together. And at some point, you feel like only we understand each other. Is it us against the whole world? They don't know we're in. That's actually a very selfishly wonderful feeling. I cherish every moment I work with actors or crews or people. You know, that school is make me feel like I want to be a forever film student. You know, it's just learn to do those things. That's the biggest reward in making those movies.
You got the mic.
I got it.
I'm not taking it away.
So there's a love-hate relationship with 3D. So how do you think? So how do you think audiences, especially older audiences, will they embrace the new cinematic experience? So I want to hear from the filmmakers and also from the actors' point of view.
Well, I think that the 3D is so subtle. It is, again, it feels like you're actually in the room with the actors. It gives dimension to their performances. It's not like the old 3D where you get eye strain, and that's all gone now. There's no headaches anymore. It's the way they've done it with, Anne can explain it, or Bill can explain it better than I can, but it's very comfortable to watch, and I hope the audience gets to experience it in 3D.
Hi. Clive, you brought up cloning, and my question is, your character at some point talks about the issue of cloning in the film, where you say, when you clone someone or when you recreate someone, you have an opportunity to not grieve any longer, to not lose the person that you love and have those experiences in life. And I just wanted to know from anyone who wants to answer, how do you think that you would feel if that became a possibility, if that became a reality, where if we're not cloning animals, we're now cloning human beings, and that becomes a reality where you no longer have to experience grief or loss?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know that was deep.
Thanks a lot for that.
Wow, who wants to take that?
The human quest to overcome our pain, right? So we're all trying to figure out how to eliminate suffering from our lives. And there was an interesting phrase I heard the other day called, they said poisoned honey, that we reach for poisoned honey a lot in order to overcome our pain and suffering. And I, you know, when I think about cloning, and we talked about it a lot on this movie, and you know, it's one of those scientific reaches that I think that we've already gone down the road. So I'm sure there's absolutely things that have happened in cloning that we don't know about yet that we're going to find out. But my opinion is that cloning will ultimately pan out to be poisoned honey. It will be a reach that will potentially come back and bite humanity in a way that we're probably not considering fully.
We got time for two more questions, so hang on. You got the first.
Jim Alexander here with Real Talker. Will, question for you. You've been synonymous with the sci-fi and action genre for years. You've been kicking ass for decades, but has it come to a point where you start thinking about the next stage in your career with roles? You're not going to be able to jump off buildings forever, you know, but have you thought about what you'd like to do next? What sort of genre films? And I've seen kind of Clive transition slowly into that space himself, but have you thought about what you would like next for you to be, what sort of genres and roles to take?
Actually, you can't jump off buildings forever.
Yeah, no, exactly. You can't keep me jumping off buildings into my hundreds.
well,
No, I think more than just a transition in roles, it's I turned 51 last week, and I'm really. I'm experiencing a transition in my life. More than ever, I'm seeing my role in the world as a role of service, you know. And in my younger days, it was ambition, you know. I wanted to win. I wanted to put points on the board. And now I'm kind of growing into the position in my life where I'm kind of just the main question that I ask myself before I do anything is, how is this of service to the human family? So with that prism, I'll be making more and more decisions in my life. I love science fiction. I love filmmaking. Even wanting to do this here at YouTube, you know, is a bit of an outreach for me to a new generation or the next generation of artists and filmmakers. I'm just trying to figure out how everything that I do is conscious and thought out and of some justifiable service to the human family.
Before we get to the last question over here, I just want to ask Will, Philly represent.
Oh, Philly!
No, absolutely. So what was the point where you said we got to make Henry a Philly guy?
I know, yeah. No, you know, for me, we didn't change that, did we? No, Henry was always from Philly. Yeah, that wasn't. Yeah, you know, when I read it, I was like, that's Jerry trying to get me to say yes to the world.
We're not nominated. We know what to do.
Yeah, but it was already in there.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I have the last question right here.
It's for Clive. Whenever we talk to actors about playing a villain, this guy is so delicious and sinister at the same time, playing Dr. Evil. I wanted to know how it felt to take that on, and what is it you could have possibly liked. Also, I don't know if you knew Will before, but now you do. Could you please spill the beans on Will Smith and working with him?
Don't you dare spill the beans on Will Smith.
This is the press. You have to tell the truth.
It's funny, because when you talk about, like, you know, when people say about playing bad guys, I've never ever approached any character, anything I've ever done as a bad guy or a good guy, or you just take on the part, and you know, often the most interesting thing is to play flawed characters, and I just never approach it going, oh, how do I play a bad guy? I look at the guy and look at what he does and think, okay, what's the way in here? What's the best way of expressing it? So I don't sort of ever sort of take on a part thinking, okay, so I'm playing a bad guy, how do I do that? In terms of working with this man, the risk of embarrassing him, he is like the best version of major movie star you could ever come across. In terms of his acting skills, in terms of his discipline, his focus, his, you know, we did those scenes, we walk onto the set and it's incredibly focused and on point, and it was just an absolute pleasure. He's a hugely impressive guy and actor.
Oh, thank you, Clive. Thank you. In terms of playing a bad guy, what was really interesting, along with what Clive was saying, is, you know, the perception that, and I learned something about this. I've never played a character, you know, that was really a bad guy in that sense, but what was great about Clive's perspective is that there's no such thing as a bad guy. He was like, the bad guy's the good guy in his story, right? So, in the bad guy's mind, you're the bad guy, right? So that idea, it was a good click for me in that comprehension, and, you know, Clive really pushing to get clear on the point. What everybody when you wake up in the morning, you have a point. You know, nobody wakes up and says, I want to be a bad guy today, right? You wake up and anything you do, however we look at it, and we like, that's a bad guy, right? But in the person's mind, they're doing good, they're doing right. Nobody wants to do bad. And that was a really interesting thing to watch as Clive worked through the character and found how the character was 100% right in his own mind.
Okay, last question right here.
Well, this is for you. You said you have been doing, you have been playing Henry, going back and playing Junior. How did you keep at it, doing this every day, the same thing, repeating it same? And the second question is, do you have any advice to your 23 yourself?
Oh, that's interesting. So first question, what Aang did that was really great is, what makes someone, when you say, oh man, he or she's really an actor's director, is when they understand how to create circumstances for you to achieve the psychological and emotional space that they're looking for. So Aang was really good about separating Henry from Junior in the scheduling. Right, that I would get, you know, you get lathered up into Henry, and if the shift is too abrupt, it's hard to get your mind around it. But so he did a really great job of separating the time from Henry and Junior, so I could spend more time in one mindset or the other. And in terms of advice to my younger self, that question came up a lot, and my younger self was wildly and insanely aggressive. You know, at 23 years old, I was naive and ambitious and aggressive. And there's a power to naivete. There's a power that I'm actually trying to get back in my life right now. So I would be asking my 23-year-old self for advice more than trying to, because he made some good-ass decisions. I'm like, I wouldn't have done it that way, you know, but he made some good calls, you know. So for me, just in the last couple of years, I've been feeling trapped by the success that I've had, and that the decisions and choices I've been able to make have been smaller, trying to protect Will Smith, you know. So on my 50th birthday, you know, I was like, F it. And I just jumped out of a helicopter over the Grand Canyon, trying to get back to that youthful, fearless space. So I would be interviewing him more than trying to give him advice.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gemini Man opens October 11th.
October 11th.
So much, everybody. Thank you so much.